This is the DTV Digest, the podcast that brings you news and reviews of films which didn't make it to the cinema. And now, here's your host, Mike Parkin.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the DTV Digest, the podcast which brings you reviews of films which didn't make it to the cinema and instead went straight to DVD, Blu-ray, or streaming media. I'm your host, Mike Parkin, and joining me, as usual, is Richard Hawes.
Hello, everybody.
And this week, we'll be taking a look at the extraterrestrial abduction movie Proximity. We'll be doing our short shot, which is Nightfire. Not so short, that one, Rich, but we'll get into that later on. And a obscure action movie called Shadow Fury, starring Sam Bottoms. But before that, let's just jump straight in with Proximity. Yes, so our first review is Proximity. When a NASA Jet Propulsion Lab scientist gets abducted by a UFO, it sets him on a quest to find out what really happened and why. Now, Rich, this is a really interesting film. It's not low budget by any stretch of the imagination. There's a lot of production values gone into this, not just with the special effects, but the locations, yes. All the technical aspects behind the camera, some really good special effects, especially with those sort of white android characters and things. My only sort of real take on this is it doesn't really know what sort of film it wants to be. It's quite a long film. It's just short of 2 hours.
Yeah.
And it does sort of take its time. So it sort of heads in various different directions before sort of settling down into what it, you know, what you'd expect, I think.
I understand what you're saying, and I think it's trying to be all of Steven Spielberg's movies. or at least like three of them.
There's a lot of Close Encounters.
There's a lot of Close Encounters. There's E.T.
And
also, in terms of other 80s movies, War Games, I felt, was a big influence on it as well, even though that's not a Spielberg.
No, but there's other aspects of it. You know, you've got the sort of the sort of natural sort of like, I've been abducted, I'm on the run from covert government agency, blah blah blah, trying to track down sort
the men,
of,
the know, men in black.
The men in black trying to track down people who may have been through similar experiences or you know, and things, who may have the answer, all that sort of stuff. But then you have like scenes where, you know, this whole thing at the beginning where he's trying to convince people that what he went through, and it almost plays it in real time when he's like making copies of his little cassette tape and sending them out to all the different news agencies. It's, you know, it takes forever, and there's scenes like that all through the film where it's just like, yes, no, it's really important that you understand his journey from A to B on his bike, you know, and things like this, you know, that he gets on the train at this stop and then he gets off at this one and it takes this amount of time. You know, there's a lot of that sort of stuff going on in the film all the time.
Yeah, I think that you could definitely have done a bit more tight editing. The thing about the cassettes and the copying that suggested to me that this was not taking place now, that it was taking place perhaps in a lifetime, but they were using a lot of other technology which was really
there's a lot of smartphone modern stuff in there.
Yeah, so that's what I thought. So I'm just trying to remember in my head. I was like, were they using contemporary, because I thought they were. I remember some quite fancy computers and stuff, but then he was doing these copied tapes, and I was getting a bit confused about why that was. But
I think it might have been in the script, you know, maybe it was an old script that they sort of like eventually got around to filming, and you know, that sort of information was still in there, or maybe it was just recording on an analog sort of media rather than sort of digital. Maybe that sort of made it more real, you know, it's difficult to say.
Because I was thinking that a lot of, you know, if that's set now and he's putting it on this old format, he's sending it to loads of people and they're not even going to be able to look at it potentially,
right.
unless I'm completely wrong on that, you know. But I'll, you know, I'll let sort of push that to one side. The film itself does, as you say, move in all different directions. You don't really know where it's going, which is actually quite good, because it keeps it fresh and keeps the unexpected. You don't know what's going to go. They throw in the stuff with these Code 8 style android figures, which really don't fit in the rest of the film at all. Because no,
where did they come from?
It's like all of a sudden,
advanced technology. You know, seriously advanced technology. Why would they be sort of like hunting down UFOs if they've got that sort of technology already?
Yeah, it's all of a sudden you're in
stuff. Yeah.
Yeah, it's like all of a sudden Star Wars stormtroopers are in the normal world. You know, like a bit like in The Predator. But that had an explanation. They'd come out from outer space, whereas these guys are just sort of, oh yeah, the government's created them.
Yeah.
No, you know, with no real explanation whatsoever. And
it was a bit bizarre, yeah.
And they didn't really look that great, I felt. You know, that was kind of the budget. There was a budget limitation in the masks and stuff. But, you know, when there's a whole sequence on the train and everything, you know, that's, you know, good sets, good well shot. I mean, the film in places, quite a lot of it actually, looks very nice. It's very, you know, very well photographed. As you say, there's some really nice visual effects in there. Costa Rica is a location, so I think they shot in Costa Rica. It's really good. Yep. Brings a lot of production value. But the film itself is kind of undermined by a real self-consciousness. It feels all the time like it's trying really hard. Yeah. And you can't get away from that. And that is highlighted by the score, which is so grand and John Williams style. It's in your face all the time.
It is.
So you're really thinking about the score, which is the thing a score shouldn't do. They always say the score should be so good that you don't really notice it against the rest of it. It fits so well. And in this case, it was just too much.
And none more so during that climactic scene, and the lead up to that as well had me thinking, oh shit, am I watching a Christian movie?
Yeah, the whole aliens looking for Jesus kind of.
All of a sudden, I thought, is this like somebody sort of slipped us a Christian movie by stealth here?
Yeah, but that's the only moment, isn't it? There's nothing else.
Through the credits. I was looking through the credits, sort of seeing what, you know, if there's any sort of major sort of Christian organisations sort of like payrolling this or bankrolling this thing, but there wasn't. No, it's just it's just part of the script.
But I would say that sequence, which is kind of like a dream sequence-y kind of bit. I mean, that was really well shot. Really, you know, really well put, really amazing looking. That they clearly spent a lot of time on lots of different details. There's lots of, so again, the self-consciousness. They're sort of really sort of drawing attention to things. There's a bit at the beginning where the clock, they do, it's an old trick, you know, where the clock winds forward quickly. And there's some sort of funky sort of synth pop playing and that. It's good.
Opening sequence as well, which was really well edited together, where you had like, you know, this guy on this sort of radio and he's looking at dials and radar and all the rest of it, you know, and you're looking through the reflection of his glasses, you know, to see the screens. And it was really, really well done, really, really nicely edited together. It's very, you know, very pacey. But as you say, it's like, you know, other times it's like, time just stretches forever while we're sort of watching the most mundane details unfold. It's bizarre.
The director and writer of the film is a guy called Eric DeNussi, who has a strong background in visual effects on films like Pacific Rim and Tron Legacy, and he's worked as a digital artist on Stranger Things. All sorts of art. He's even directed at what appears to be a Star Wars fan film at one point called Star Wars: The New Republic Anthology. Although it's only 2 minutes, according to IMDb, so I don't know what that is.
That's whether it was an anthology.
Well, exactly. I don't know how that works, but directed, I think, a few other shorts and stuff as well. But this is his first big feature, and he's clearly put everything into it.
Yeah,
you know, it's almost like, you know, it's my one shot. I'm gonna make this my big ambitious, you know, production, which is why it's so long, which is why there's so many ideas in it, and why so much care and attention to, you know, some of the aspects of it, and, you know, ambitious, and some of the other stuff is perhaps too ambitious. Stuff stays with you. You know, like the log cabin where the guy was abducted. I mean, that's a beautifully shot location. The log cabin looks amazing. You know, it's almost dreamlike. It's almost like it can't be real. But the film itself just doesn't hang together as well as it could do. I think there's a really good, perhaps, short film or shorter film in this.
Yeah, I think they could be a sort of tight 90 minutes. If they ditched all the stuff about him trying to prove what happened to himself and instead, you know, went looking for answers, I think that might have been a more enjoyable film, a more entertaining film. But, you know, the fact that he's sort of like posting stuff on YouTube and reading the comments that people are leaving. I was kind of glad, though, the cynic in me, I was thinking, they're just going to sort of have people going, oh, wow, this is amazing, you know. So I had a few of those and then sort of go, fake, this is crap. You know, all the rest of it. I thought, yeah, that's YouTube for you.
Yeah, I like that. Yeah, that was very good. The other thing is, so he comes back and he's kind of got these powers, but they don't really explore that a huge amount. You know, at one point, it seems like that's going to be a big thing. But then it's so quite a lot of time is spent on it, and it doesn't really go anywhere. So it's almost like that wasn't really needed at all.
At first it seems like it's just in his head as well, isn't it? Because, you know, he's able to make things disappear with his mind. Mm. But then when he shows his mate what he can do, his mate doesn't see it. Oh, it's only affecting you. It's just in your head, basically. So it's like...
It's his perception.
Yeah. And then it's, you know, for some reason, it works at the end. There you go.
So the cast is, as far as, you know, it's an unknown cast, which is the other thing. You know, you've got this fancy, you know, very sort of shiny, fancy-looking film, but with a cast of complete unknowns. It would have been good, I think, if they could have got someone in there to add some, you know, get a name or a recognised character actor. Mm. In some of the roles, like, you know, the main abductee, the one they go on the quest to find, he kind of really that's kind of the War Games element that I was thinking of.
Shouldn't, you know, Sam Elliott really, shouldn't it?
If they could have got someone, you know, I don't know, even like I think Sam Bottoms or someone, you know, we're going to get to later, you know, somebody of that caliber who's not, you know, who's been around a while, great, good actor, recognizable.
Yeah.
But affordable.
I
would say interesting film, worth a look if you're into sci-fi, but, you know, it's sort of approached with a degree of caution, I would say.
It's a lot longer than it needs to be, that's for sure. Mm. Okay, so Rich, how are you going to score it?
6 out of 10.
Yeah, I'm definitely going to join you on a 6 for this one. That's Proximity. It should be out by the time you listen to this, so check it out. Our short shot this week is Nightfire. As the US government prepares a special deal which will help the Ukraine defend itself from Russia, two secret agents are sent on a mission to retrieve stolen microdiscs and end up freeing a political prisoner in the process. So this is available on Amazon Prime. It's 40 minutes long. It's probably the longest short we've dealt with for quite a while.
Yeah.
And it kind of plays like... It's kind of like the setup for a series, isn't it? It's, you know, it's got some pretty decent stunt work in it, a few car chases, gun battles, that sort of thing, and it kind of leaves the door open. You know, this is almost like an origin story for like some covert organization that's off the books or something.
Yeah, it's definitely part way between a feature film and a pilot episode, but, you know, it's like kind of that. 45 minutes, could be an episode of 24 kind of thing. Mm-hmm. But it's all shot in really nice widescreen, which is actually becoming quite standard, I think, for some TV shows. Is Jack, do you know, have you watched Jack Ryan?
Yes. Well,
is that shot in widescreen?
I think so.
Because I know, like,
because
I know, like, Jean-Claude Van Johnson and a couple of others have gone for that cinematic ratio, even though they're making a TV show, which is a really interesting combination. But this does feel like a movie. It's just like a, you know, a short movie, so say more like a TV episode. Quite liked it. The whole Ukraine setting, and I was a bit confused because it seems like it was, from what I can tell in the credits, that the film was actually made in Italy. So, but it is set, as far as I could tell, in Ukraine.
Yeah.
And so all the action is kind of taking place there. And it really made me think of Brian De Palma's Mission Impossible, the whole sort of first, the first part of the film in Prague. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's got kind of a dark European Mission Impossible kind of feel to it, with some nice action. We've got Dylan Baker in the cast. He's like headlining, which is, you know, good for, you know, he's a great character actor. He doesn't often headline movies. So seeing, I first came across this in a trailer, which was, I think, published the same day that it was released on Amazon. Saying, you know, and it looks just like a proper movie. And then all of a sudden it comes to the end and it says on Amazon from, I think it was May 1st or something. And I was just like, whoa, okay, hang on a minute. I've got to go and take a look at this. And then I realized actually it's only 43 minutes. And yeah, the guy in the lead was fine. The thing is, I did like it while I was watching it, but I can't massively remember a huge amount about it, apart from the fact that there's kind of this subversive element of, you know, lots of double crosses and things aren't what they seem, and you know,
and it does
is who's working for the greater good, and
it hangs on a huge I won't say coincidence, but a contrivance that this particular secret agent was going to, you know, I suppose, you know, they'd have done their research, or they knew who these guys were, otherwise they wouldn't have done it. But, you know, it seems a bit of a contrivance that they would have banked the whole thing on whether or not he was going to, you know, be charitable enough to let this guy out of jail while he's on the in the middle of a mission. You know, this guy, he's going, oh, there's a prisoner here, and goes, his partner's going, yeah, so, you know, stay on mission sort of thing. But he doesn't. He lets this guy out, and it has consequences down the road.
Yeah, but I think you're right there. I think there's a lot of, you know, if a different decision would be made, then the whole plan wouldn't have worked, kind of thing.
If those two agents had, you know, if they'd taken each other's roles, for example, you know, instead of going, oh, no, you do that bit, and I'll go and do this bit, then it just wouldn't have worked, because the guy would, you know, the other guy is cynical enough to go, yeah, collateral damage, so what? You know, then what would have happened? That would have been quite interesting.
At the end of the film, we focus quite a lot on the more cynical one of the two, the one who's not the hero. And kind of a lot, we were following him quite a lot at the end, and it seemed, I kept asking myself why. I can't remember, because he wasn't really playing a big role in the story, you know. And all of a sudden, at the end, it's like they're making a big thing about him.
I think it was a case of they, you know, the idea is that they were going to recruit him as well.
Oh, okay.
But yeah, because they gave him the micro disc things in a letter.
Okay.
So I think that was, you know, it was a way of saying yes, I'm alive, sort of thing. You know, it was good. And you're right, it does have that sort of feeling of De Palma's Mission Impossible, especially with the sort of, you know, the sort of double crosses and the, you know, the red herrings and that sort of thing. But I thought it worked quite well. One of the things I did like as well was when they did sort of pick up this prisoner guy, you know, the other one immediately sort of like does a retinal scan on him to sort of, you know, find out what his identity is, which I thought was quite decent. You know, they actually had the wherewithal to actually do that, instead of just thinking, oh, he's a, you know, political prisoner, he's fine, let's just let him tag along on our mission without doing any sort of checks or balances at all. So yeah, no, that was all right. It was pretty polished. Could have done with a bit more polish at places. And really, it could have spent more time developing its central characters. They didn't get any chance at all, other than, okay, one's quite altruistic and is willing to question his orders, whereas the other one is sort of like more like cynical and seen it and done it all, you know. So he's unfazed by someone who might be sort of pulling a fast one on him.
Yeah, from what I can tell, this film took about 5 years to get made and released. I think it was about some of the listings for the film say 2015, but it has only just been released. So that is confirmed. But I think that it's been involved in crowdfunding campaigns and stuff to try and get it made and finished. I'm not sure if the director, Brando Fenton, is either Italian or he's based in Italy. So hang on, he was born in France, actually. I think he made it with, I can't remember if there were two directors listed or whether it was just him, but this is like his project. He's like a quite a young guy. I think he's like not even 30 yet. And based on, you know, this, if this does well on Amazon, I could certainly see him getting hired for, you know, if not a feature, then some, you know, series TV kind of work.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. Yes, so we don't score the shorts, but we will put a link. We'll put a link to the trailer, and if you're an Amazon subscriber, you can find this. So check it out. Our DTV throwback this week is Shadow Fury. An alcoholic mercenary is hired by a shady cloning company to protect its scientists from an unstoppable ninja programmed to kill. So, Rich, as usual, I'd say about between 80 and 90% of the time when we do a DTV throwback, it's usually something I've never even heard of, let alone sort of, you know, come across. This one I have never, ever, ever heard of before. Had you seen it before?
Absolutely. It's prized in... It's one of the few DVDs I've kept in my collection. It's one of my favourite films.
Well, I should bloody well hope so too, because this is a seriously hidden gem. In fact, so hidden that it's currently out of print in the UK. We managed to find a copy on YouTube that somebody had loaded up. So we'll put a link to that on the in the footnotes. But this is a film that was, it feels of its time, but at the same time ahead of its time, if you see what I mean. In certainly in terms of the action and the actual martial arts and things that go on in this film, I think it's probably about sort of 10 years ahead of what we would have expected to have seen in a film of this quality.
Yeah, this is kind of, if we look back on, you know, where the sort of Hong Kong influenced action movies were going in the 90s. So Drive is kind of the big touchstone.
Yes.
And it's no real surprise to learn that Shadow Fury has come from that background. You know, people who made Drive went on to make this. A lot of the stunt work in this is from Alpha Stunts, the same team who worked on Drive. And even the action director, Tatsuri Koiki, he goes actually back to Guyver, Dark Hero in 94, and he's worked on
Isaac Power Rangers stuff as well.
Power Rangers, well, him and the director, Makoto Yokoyama, Power Rangers is kind of their main thing that they did, and they've done other bits and bobs, but they haven't actually done a lot of features. This is kind of as you say, it's like a little gem. It's like a diamond in the rough, because a lot of the people involved in this haven't really made another film in terms of, I mean, even the guy who's the lead in the movie,
Makoto Yokoyama. Masakatsu Funaki.
So he's not really done anything else apart from, I mean, he has done other stuff. I used to buy stuff, you know, just if I saw it. So he did a film called Honor a few years ago, which had like Roddy Piper and stuff in it. And I got it hoping that there would be like a big action scene, but he was actually, it was a bit like the role that Fred the Hammer Williamson has in this. He's there, but he doesn't really do much. Mm-hmm. So that's another thing to mention is, I mean, the cast on this is great. So we got Masakatsu Funaki in the lead with Sam Bottoms, who's got, you know, a bit of a name, not a huge name. He's got a good background, good filmography, but he's not a big name. Yeah. But you've got Fred Williamson in there, and also Noriyuki Patmorita. Now, they're both basically cameos. Fred Williamson's got two scenes. Pat Morita, I think, has got one or two scenes. They do elevate it. But you've also got loads of other reasons to see it. You know, this is, he's a bit forgotten now, but this was Taylor Lautner's first movie.
Yes, it was, yeah.
And so he starts off, you see him when he's young, doing all the great martial arts that he was, you know, able to do at that time, and, you know, what eventually made him, Twilight kind of made him a bigger star, but, yeah. You know, he kind of got stuff like... Yeah, he went on to do some other... He has done some other martial arts, but he grows up. His character is genetically engineered. He basically grows up to be Bas Rutten, the MMA guy. The UFC. Is he a champion, Bas Rutten? I don't know. But there's loads of cool appearances in this film, which is... there's also a girl. There's a girl in it whose father gets killed in one of the scenes early. She's gone on to have, like, an amazing career... On several television series and whatever, and this was her first thing as well. So there's lots of talent in here, and it's such a low budget film that they didn't really even have enough money for set design or anything. It's like Plan 9 from Outer Space, kind of draw a curtain behind you kind of product.
Production design. At the same time, it starts off with one of the best. Walking away from explosions scenes you're ever likely to see. You know, it just looks absolutely superb. Even in sort of crappy YouTube vision, it looks really good. And as I said, you know, the actual sort of martial arts bits are really well done. It's also probably the most morally ambiguous film I've seen for quite a while, and pretty nihilistic as well. Which I thought was quite just interesting. You know, the fact that Sam Bottom's character has been hired by this corporation saying, oh, yeah, this other scientist, he's crazy, he's out to kill us, he's with his cyborg ninja guy. And then when you do meet Pat Morita, you think, yeah, he really is a psycho.
He's got the craziest hair of any mad scientist ever.
he looks like he's escaped from, like, you know, sort of like a Street Fighter or something. And you go, he's obviously the bad guy, but then you sort of learn more of what's going on. But it's the fact that Sam Bottom's character is he's terminally ill with failing liver and this, and they go, oh well, you know, that cyborg guy, he's got a really good liver, so you know, if you have to kill him, then we'll do a transplant. And he's like, yeah, okay. So all through the film, he's like, I want your liver, or kidneys, or whatever it is.
It is the liver, yeah. So he got, I want your goddamn liver.
Yeah.
So, but that becomes, the film itself, you don't know how much if it is intentionally comical, but it's low ludicrous. It is quite funny. But the whole film has, you've got the kind of cartoonish characters. Mm. It's set in the future, but also it's a bit like all those old... post-apocalyptic movies where it's the future, but it's also the past.
Mm.
So this is essentially, he's a recreated ninja for one thing, but Sam Bottom's character is basically a cowboy. So it's a cowboy versus a ninja, and then they kind of form an uneasily alliance, as the latter thing. So which ties in with some of the themes of, you used to have the cop teams teaming up with the Yakuza movies in the 90s.
Yeah. Yeah.
So Back to Back was one of those, which I think Makoto Yokoyama.
American Yakuza, both really, really good films. American Yakuza, of course, gave Viggo Mortensen one of his early lead roles. So. Very good film.
Yeah, so this film is kind of touching on. I mean, you can imagine this film being made in the 1980s with Nick Nolte and Sho Kasugi easily.
Yeah.
Funaki is. Basically, Sho Kasugi. I mean, he even looks like him.
At first I thought, is it Sho Kasugi or is it Lou Diamond Phillips? Or is it kind of like somewhere between the two, which is quite funny.
The liver stuff is hilarious. And, but I was also thinking, that in itself almost seems like a nod to I don't know if it was, is it Hard Boiled where he's trying to get the corneas?
The killer. That was the killer.
So there's the whole thing about the liver and stuff. And it goes very much in a sort of a heroic bloodshed kind of angle, you know, right at the end, I felt. At the end, he's like, I don't want your liver, I want your help. It's like the priorities have changed and stuff.
It's like, we have that other woman, Sasha, who's the prostitute with the heart of gold sort of thing.
Yeah, the hooker with the heart of gold story.
Which is quite interesting. But what I liked about that was the fact that we meet her pimp as well, you know, which, you know, always like seeing a pimp getting slapped around by a cyborg ninja, you know, that old trope.
But her, and her character brings out Takeru, who is the character of the ninja. She brings out Takeru's humanity because he has been genetically engineered. He's got what they call this obedience strain, which is the holy grail of what they've been trying to achieve, of create these super soldiers that will do exactly what they want. But he's fighting against that nature. There's a lot of themes in here that relate, I mean, especially with, like, Taylor Norton's, when we see Taylor Norton as Kismet when he's young, there's a lot that ties in with Kurt Russell's Soldier.
Yeah.
And I'm sure many other films as well. You know, this is plowing sort of very familiar ground. But yeah, so the action's really good. I mean, the falls these guys are taking are amazing.
Some of the kicks they do.
Kicks, yeah.
Where the guy's sort of, you know, been thrown across the room and slamming into walls and things. You know, it just looks really, really well done.
Yeah. Very, very self-confident. I mean, there's a lot of wire work in here, which was kind of being brought. I mean, this is around the time of The Matrix. So this was all becoming... So this is all becoming quite common. Not common, but, you know, more popular. It's become less so now. So this film doesn't really fit. It didn't really fit at the time. When I saw it when it came out in 2002, I think it actually got released here. It was made in 2001. When I picked it up when it first came out, it felt like an old film then. You know, I mean, the film has a kitsch kind of rough quality to it, and this really... again, a bit like Proximity, the score is like really in your face, but in this movie, it really fits it nicely. It's kind of, I mean, it's very repetitive. We hear the same music a lot, but it's got a very distinctive sound. So it's kind of a timeless film. You know, it's mixing all these different themes. It doesn't really feel like it belonged to the time it was made. Doesn't really feel like it belonged to now. Feels like it could have belonged to the 80s, but some of it doesn't really fit. I think it's a fantastic movie. And not enough people have seen it.
Yeah, I totally agree. Just a couple of other observations before we wrap up on this one. One is the fact that Sam Bottom's character is given this list of scientists to protect, and he fails miserably. You know, he's got this list, and it's like, you know, the first person's killed off, and he's like, well, I guess I better move on to the next one and see if I can save them instead, sort of thing, which is quite amusing.
And it's the obligatory female scientist.
But what was interesting about her character, and as I was saying, there's this sort of weird sort of nihilistic sort of streak to the film, is that, you know, she's one of the scientists working for this company and finds out what they've actually been up to with the Kismet program and things like that. And so when the cyborg comes looking to kill her, she's like, yeah, you should. You know, you should kill me because, you know, we need to sort of stop what's going on. So I thought that was interesting as well, you know. And I think it's a sort of the Japanese attitude to life and sort of destiny and honour and things, which, you know, sort of like are brought out in the script in that way.
My part, sort of parting notes. So Masu Funaki he's an MMA guy and a wrestler, I believe. So he was not an actor per se. So we don't actually, as we were saying, he's not actually done that many roles, but he's done all sorts of very physical, you know, sportsman kind of stuff. He's also popped up in Godzilla Final Wars, which is well worth seeing if you haven't seen that. It's got Shane Kasugi in it as well. That's and Don Fry as well. The I think he's the American. We saw him in a short film a while back. I can't remember what it was. He was playing the mayor of the of the town. The short film based on a video game. Can't remember what it was called now. Oh, we talked about it quite a long time ago.
Yeah, I know.
Anyway, so Final Wars is worth seeing. Anyway, but Makoto Yokoyama, he did another film called Wicked Game, which is also called Extreme Heist. That isn't as good as this. I couldn't remember whether he made it after or before, but it was around the same time, and it's got a lot of really good stunt work in it as well. That's worth seeking out as well. But also the guy Tatsuro Koiki, I'm probably not pronouncing his name very well, who was the action director of this. He did a film called K-20, the fiend with 20 faces.
I love that film. It's great.
Which I really think we should try and cover at some point. Mm-hmm. But that's a really polished, big budget blockbuster kind of movie with some really great action.
Yeah, sort of steampunk kind of thing. So everyone
yeah,
flying around in gyrocopters and airships and things. Yeah, it's really.
And it's got a great Sunday afternoon adventure movie kind of feel to it. So this is a great movie to seek out itself, but also use it as a gateway to try and sort of discover some of the other things these guys have done. So yeah, I can't say more than that. See it. Check it out. Find it wherever you can.
Yeah. The fact that we've talked about this film twice as long as either of the other films that we've talked about tonight should give you an idea why you should sort of check this one out. We'll put a link, a very tenuous link, into the footnotes where you can find this. If you happen to sort of be scouring through the likes of CEX or something and happen to come across an old DVD copy of Shadow Fury, you really should pick it up. It's definitely worth it. And that's the end of this week's show. So thank you for listening. Thank you for Rich for joining me as usual.
No problem at all.
And tune in again next time. Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the DTV Digest. Let us know your thoughts in the comments and tune in again next time.